covered a lot of topics today on the show. It's been a great day of discussion. And as always, I'm appreciative that you took the time to join the conversation, whether you're listening in, whether you shot us a text, gave us a call. It's always appreciated. We started the show talking about intraprovincial trade barriers because this is the thing where, of course, heavily focused on the election right now. Once the election is done, new government is elected, whoever it may be, then it's time, roll up the sleeves and let's get to work. And there's different things that need to be given attention, and interprovincial trade barriers is something that we've been talking about a fair bit over the last number of months. How and what we are trading within Canada, what goods we can share, what goods we can basically do a better job of selling within the country rather than sending so much business outside of our borders. I mean, we've always been good neighbors, good business partners, but as we continue to deal with tariffs from the U.S. and from China, it's more and more the time has come that we need to be good to ourselves within Canada. So that was why I had the conversation I did with Gil Land. Gil, an associate professor in the Law and Business Department of the Toronto Metropolitan University's Ted Rogers School of Management, to pull this apart, including a Stats Canada report that just came out that shows what interprovincial trade looks like in Canada. And some of the results aren't the best, including for here in Saskatchewan, which is what we're talking with Gil about on the phone. Gil, we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Evan. Great to be here.
So when we think about and talk about interprovincial trade, I mean, it's become a pretty important part of the overall conversation we're having right now on trade, generally speaking. Some of these Stats Can numbers don't paint the best pictures. Can you just talk a little bit about this report in general?
Well, I mean, the report seems to indicate a general decrease in interprovincial trade, and it's not clear what's driving that. I think it's really important that we look into this. But in any event, the movement towards reducing interprovincial trade barriers is something that was long coming. And, now is the time to address it, now that there's enough political will behind it.
It's, of course, when a report like this comes out, I always quickly comb through it and look for the word Saskatchewan, because we're curious to know how Saskatchewan fared. Maybe not great when you look at the largest declines in interprovincial manufacturing sales. Saskatchewan was in, I would say, the top three, and I don't use top three as a positive thing.
So I think one of the things to look at, I mean, one of the factors to look at when we're looking at interprovincial trade is, I think it's an important part of Canada's strategy dealing with these U.S. Trade tariffs, but it's only a part of it. So two important factors to note, even though I've seen estimates that say reducing these barriers could be anything from 1 to 8% GDP boost for Canada, two important things, scale and distance. Shipping something from, let's say, BC to Saskatchewan is a long distance. Even if all interprovincial trade barriers were dropped, there's transportation costs. The other thing is scale. I think Ontario is the largest province with 16 million people. I think Saskatchewan, Manitoba, they're in the 1.3, 1.5 million. So when manufacturers are trying to decide where to turn, they have to factor in the cost of transportation. Even in a frictionless world with no interprovincial trade barriers or regulations, and the market that they're getting, so the smaller markets may end up dropping off the table, regardless of interprovincial trade barriers, depending upon economic circumstances. Put in perspective, if you're going to ship something across Canada, if you go to the EU, which is, once you're talking these types of distances, to the EU, it's like 450 million people. Germany alone is like 84 million.
Yeah. 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 The population, the geography that we deal with, no doubt plays into this. Gil Land is my guest, associate professor in law and business department at the Toronto Metropolitan University's Ted Rogers School of Management. Because of trade, because of the discussion that we've been having lately since tariffs have come into the conversation, interprovincial trade barriers has been hoisted up. I see this as nothing but positive. Are you seeing positive momentum in Canada in trying to reduce these barriers and explore opportunities within the country?
Definitely. This all started quite some time ago. So in 1995, we actually had an agreement, the Agreement on Internal Trade. Then in 2017, we had a broader one, the Canadian Free Trade Agreement. The only issue with that was basically there were so many provincial exceptions. So we had this deal where we would try to reduce these internal trade barriers, but then there's a lot of exceptions for different provinces. But what you're seeing now is a lot of provinces negotiating with each other, including Saskatchewan, I believe. Ontario now has proposed legislation to eliminate all of the provincial exceptions that it had in the Canadian Free Trade Agreement. So there's definitely momentum here.
Can you give us an example or just an understanding of why those provincial exemptions existed and what it might mean if we see those fall off the table?
So quite a few of them, I think, I mean, the ones that have had the greatest spotlight are trucking regulations, where basically during transportation, a commercial vehicle maybe needs a second inspection just because it crossed a provincial barrier. There may be different standards about which trucks are allowed on roads during which times. And then there's different packaging and labeling requirements are going across the board, as well as provincial licensing requirements. So, for example, a nurse that's registered and licensed in one province may not be able to practice in another province. So the proposals that are coming up is to reduce or eliminate these barriers, and that can drop significantly the cost of doing business and the ability for different professionals to move across borders.
And, you know, I'm curious, the Ontario plan that you referenced, Gil, is that a blueprint that could help other provinces? And is that something that we maybe see informing campaigns that are happening in the federal election right now?
I think you'll see it in the campaigns in the federal elections, but I think it's actually also a very difficult topic for a federal election because, you know, when you're reducing these barriers, there are industries that may be negatively impacted. So, for example, reducing the barriers to alcohol sales. Is that going to be good or bad for local alcohol industry? That's all going to depend whether or not they can export more than in terms of the imports that are coming in to compete with them. So it may be a touchy topic because there could be different degrees of benefit for different provinces.
Mm-hmm. Gil Lann is my guest. You know, when we think about what federal government could do, regardless of political stripe, one thing is help build infrastructure that enhances interprovincial trade. And, you know, the pipeline, I think, is probably a big one that comes up, but rail, electricity, there's a variety of things that we could bring into this conversation. That in itself would drive investment in Canada. So maybe is that the angle that the federal government should be looking at on this topic?
I think in general terms, federal government would look at that. In terms of an election, there is one very important issue that needs to be dealt with, which is how do we do it and who pays for it? And again, that could be a very sensitive topic. But infrastructure definitely is the long-term goal. I think retaliatory tariffs and lowering interprovincial trade barriers is the low-hanging fruit, which the federal government is and provincial governments are quite rightly so going for at this time. But building up our infrastructure and our ability to compete at an international level definitely is the long-term goal.
Right. Gil, before I let you go, I'm maybe asking you to bring out your crystal ball on this one. But when the dust settles from the federal election and the let's say we get the agreement with the United States on the updated CUSMA and the tariff talk settles, do we now have positive momentum that will forever take interprovincial trade up to the next level? Or is there the fear that when the dust settles, this too could subside and we slide back to where we've been?
That is one of my fears. My fears is basically, I think it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So, for example, the United States has put all these tariffs and then is expecting negotiations. So all these countries will come in, try to cut a deal with the United States, and then they'll have some tariff relief. But they're given the approach of the United States so far with respect to its trade agreements, it's not clear whether it will honor whatever agreement that it comes to with Canada or any other country regarding tariff relief. So you could very well see us sign CUSMA, as we did more approximately 5 years ago, and then have it disregarded. So I think the important point for Canadians to remember is it is a marathon, regardless of where we get to with the United States in terms of the tariffs. In terms of future prospect, it's going to be very, very important to diversify and build our independence. I think any agreement right now with the current administration is transitory at best, not something that you could bet the farm on, literally.
Gil, this has been a really good chat. I appreciate you giving us some time this morning.
Thank you.
That was the conversation we had just off the top of the show this morning with Gil Lan, Associate Professor in the Law and Business Department, Toronto Metropolitan University, Ted Rogers School of Management, and Interprovincial Trade. It's a big one. Ontario comes out with their platform, Saskatchewan looking at ways in which it can be enhanced, and no doubt that work will continue, hopefully, aggressively over the next few months. Once, like I said in the interview, the dust settles from this federal election. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Hope you're having a good Thursday. Well into the lunch hour. It's Evan Bray. You know, one of the things that I love about the job that I'm doing now, you and I get to chat every day, which is... Never a shortage of things to talk about, but also the ability to be involved in different community events. And I'm pumped up and excited about one that's happening tonight, in Saskatoon here for, Foundations Learning and Skills Saskatchewan. So this, they've got an event happening at Prairieland Park. But first of all, Foundation Learning and Skills Saskatchewan. I've had Cheryl Harrow-Urich on the show before. She's the executive director for Foundations Learning. They are an incredible organization. They're nonprofit and they are literally changing lives around the province by providing free literacy, learning and skills development programs delivered in partnership with trained volunteers and like-minded community partners. They've been doing this for over 50 years and they do it in a number of communities. I think there are over 300 community partners in 80 plus Indigenous, non-Indigenous communities throughout Saskatchewan. But the work they do, and the thing is they've expanded so much. So it used to be strictly about literacy, about reading. Now they've got adult literacy, family, financial, children's literacy programs. So they are a great, great organization to begin with. Foundations Learning and Skills Saskatchewan. Now, tonight, they've got a fundraiser because like all nonprofits, they've got to be able to pay the bills. So they've got a fundraiser happening at Prairieland Park called Lit Up. It's presented by BHP, great sponsor for the event, happening at Prairieland Park. They bring people together. They've got a dinner. They've got a program. They've got a couple of different speakers, of course, a raffle and different things like that. And where do I come in? Well, they bring a few of us together to auction off items. Evan Bray, are you an auctioneer? Absolutely not. But they put together this virtual training. I was feeling bad for Fred Bodnaris, who from Bodnaris Auctioneering, who about 3 weeks ago had five of us on a call and is trying to give us a quick tutorial on auctioneering over the phone. So it's I'm sure that'll be fun. But they've got different prize packages. So my auction package tonight is a TCU executive suite to experience Queen. It's kind of magic. The Canada 2025 tour for six people coming up Thursday, May the 15th. So you get six tickets in the private suite, VIP suite menu, in-suite beverage service, and a $400 Taverna gift card for your group of people to go for a bite to eat before the show. So it's a pretty cool package. Have I been practicing in the mirror auctioneering? Maybe. Do you get a snapshot of it here this morning on the radio, today on the radio? Probably not. It's not, you know, the whole one bid now, two bid now, three. The way he was doing it, it was kind of like, you know, he says, it's just like counting. But then when Fred Bodnaris starts into the actual auctioning, We were all just laughing on this virtual call we were doing. Okay, we'll see how it goes. So if we get a video of it, maybe that's what we'll have to do. I'll try and have someone grab a video of it. I can give you a little audio sound of my pathetic attempt at auctioneering tonight. But going to be a great night. Prairie Land Park Foundation's Learning and Skills Saskatchewan lit up. A great event. And thanks again to BHP, the big sponsor for the event. Thanks for joining us today. Another great edition of the show and another great conversation that we will fire up again tomorrow morning at 8:30 right here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.